This is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I promise, at some point this summer, all three of us will be on a show. It's going to happen eventually. We'll just keep flip-flopping. But that's the beauty of having three guys, because we still have two here for GKW today. I'm Gib Knights from ESPN Milwaukee. Jay Hood, back from his college baseball excursions, back on GKW this week. But as we always tell you, you can always hear Jay Hood, part of the SiriusXM Pro Wrestling Nation, every Sunday from 9 a.m. until noon Eastern. Hood, what's going on, man? It's been a minute since I've been able to talk to you. What's happening?
You know what's happening. College baseball season, the UIC Flames make it to the NCAA tournament, so I got to be there. Nothing like going from San Diego, watching Christopher Sanchez pitch to Atlanta within 10 hours to cover the NCAA tournament. Georgia Tech in offense, I've never seen anything like that. Georgia Tech's offense. It's also good to go from like 60 degrees to like 90.
Sure.
About 8 hours. So that was great. But just, you know, the pageantry of the NCAA tournament, Milwaukee there, the Flames were there for UIC, Northern Illinois was there. So I'm getting my eyes adjusted to it just in case we don't have baseball next year. Just locked in.
Get all in on college baseball. I love it. Absolutely love it. Of course, we got a lot of things that happened in the world of professional wrestling. We had a PLE in WWE with the clash in Italy happening over the weekend. One title change there. Sol Ruka is now your new women's intercontinental champion. Despite having two men's heavyweight championship matches, the champions remain the champions. We will get to more of that in just a little bit. But one of the other people who lost at Clash, but then turn around and won on Monday Night Raw, we're talking about Oba Femi. And I'm going to be honest, Hood, when I saw that Oba Femi was in one of these Fatal 4-Way matches that they're doing as the qualifier to get into the semifinals of the King of the Ring tournament, I saw this and I went, oh, so Oba's going to lose here. And it's easy to protect him because it's a Fatal 4-Way. He actually went out and won the match, so he advances. Is Oba Femi going to win King of the Ring and earn himself a championship spot at SummerSlam?
I think that he should. But before I go there, I'll say that the match at Clash in Italy, in which Brock Lesnar defeated Oba Femi clean, wrong finish. Not saying Brock should have lost. I'm saying the way that Oba lost that match was very suspicious to me. So now outside interference from Paul Heyman or something in which Oba got effed in the match, I just thought that a clean victory for Brock was just strange, especially when you know Brock is on the way out at some point, maybe in Minneapolis at SummerSlam. But I do believe that Oba Femi is going to win King of the Ring because King of the Ring normally is the next superstar to be able to be great. And I think Oba fits the bill.
Is it possible? So again, because that he wins this, right? And he wants to, but he also makes sure in his promo on Monday Night Raw to mention Brock Lesnar and that they're even at 1-1. And like, I assume that the only reason for Brock to win in Italy was so you could have the third match probably at SummerSlam. But like, to me, you also have to have Oba walk out of SummerSlam as a champion. Like, strap the rocket to this kid's back. Let's see what he can do as the top guy in the company. Being a young star, a new star with the heavyweight championship, I think would be a great thing for WWE. Is it possible that, again, to just kind of square all this and make it all make sense in my mind? Okay, we have to have Oba Brock 3, part 3, yep. And Oba has to win. Is there a chance Oba main events both nights? Can Oba win King of the Ring, set up his championship match with Roman or Cody or whomever is the champion going into SummerSlam? And that's night two. But night one, like, we make this entire weekend, kind of like they did with Bryan Danielson, or Daniel Bryan at the time, I suppose, in WrestleMania 30, where he opens up, wins the triple threat, wins the World Heavyweight Championship at the end as well. And he's, you know, WrestleMania, he's got both belts. Could we end night one with Oba retiring Brock and then end night two? Or I guess, could you flip that? Is Brock retiring? Is that the main event of the entire thing since that's kind of his hometown and you have the world championship match with Oba at the end of night one, and then the championship is on the line for Brock Oba part three. I'm spitballing here because I need Oba to be a champion at the end of SummerSlam while also recognizing they're probably going to do Oba Brock part three.
Okay, so to me, at SummerSlam, the hottest thing would be Brock Lesnar retiring.
Yes.
I'm sorry for Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns, but the stories are just not hot. It's very tepid right now. So the hottest thing would be Brock Lesnar in one of those main events. Is that night one or is that night two? You want Oba to be the World Heavyweight Champion. I agree with that because I just think that based on the momentum of Oba Femi, he should be the heavyweight champion at some point. I mean, just keep the momentum going. I don't know if Triple H looks at it that way because we've talked so much about the slow boil of WWE, the slow cook of being able to just work a story until you can't work it anymore. So you may not get what you want at SummerSlam, but you will get a retirement, I think, from Lesnar. And then I think it works its way out. Like, yes, King of the Ring, Oba Femi. But then when is that World Heavyweight Championship matchup going to take place?
It's supposed to be SummerSlam. And that's the problem, I guess, with because, again, like Oba, the more Oba loses, the more he loses the luster a little bit. And I know we've had the conversation about WWE wins, losses, do they matter, do they not matter? Like, him losing to Brock, even if it's with 7 F5s, like, it takes just a little bit off of it. Now, the crowd is still super behind him, and he comes out doing the strut, you know, coming down for the fatal four-way, and he ends up winning. But, like, if he was not going to win King of the Ring, Brock interfering, doing something where he's just incapacitated on the outside, somebody else wins in the ring. Like, that's how you protect him. Now we're in one-on-one match territory in King of the Ring. And if he's not going to win King of the Ring, that means somebody else has to pin him. And whether it's clean or not, somebody else putting his shoulders to the mat is not what that dude needs right now. This dude just needs to look as dominant as possible. So he goes over whenever he does become champion, and we're going, man, who's going to beat this guy? Who's going to step up and possibly challenge this absolute monster that WWE has created? And again, for whatever reason, they decided with the monsters that they have created over the first 5 months of this year, hell, the last 8 months, going back to the end of last year with Gunther. And I know there was a little bit of, oh, his foot was under the rope with him and Cody. Yeah. But you decided to take the monsters that you created over the last 8 months and have them both lose on the same card on the same day, like, which just doesn't make sense to me. Like, even if we're doing the slow burn thing, like, how does that make sense? You've been slow burning these guys to build them up only to tear them down. Like, I just didn't understand why both of those things ended up happening at Clash in Italy.
You know, we've said on this show before that these smaller PLEs like the Clash in Italy are like house shows with lights, right? Like, this is just for the house in Italy. Unfortunately, it's just not for the house because it's connected to the storylines.
Uh-huh.
The day when there was no cameras, it's like, hey, we're doing a tour of Italy and we're going here, we're going there, we're going to France. You'd read about these finishes, but you wouldn't see them. Now they're part of the fabric of the story. And I think sometimes what we're talking about right now doesn't make sense, especially with Oba Femi. Why does Oba Femi have to lose clean? Why does Gunther have to lose? Yeah, you mentioned controversy, but still, it's a loss. So the guy that is the career killer is losing to Cody Rhodes. A dream match for later down the line is now just part of a smaller PLE in Italy. So let's see if we could talk this out together. So Oba Femi becoming King of the Ring means that he would have a world title shot. And so I'm trying to figure out which story is it. Is it Cody next? Roman seems like he's dealing with the MFT, so that sounds like Cody and Oba Femi for the future. But is it the near future? Is it going to happen in August?
I mean, it's supposed, again, part of the whole King in the Ring, and they've decided to, they've done this the last couple of times, where they've attached the world championship opportunity to it, kind of like AEW has done. We'll get into that with the Owen Hart tournaments and the things that they've done over there, where they've attached that championship opportunity with it. It's, you know, that's what the way they've decided to handle this. Oba going over Cody would be great. Like, yeah. I think that's a great way to use all of the, everything that Cody's built up. I think using that leverage in a match against Oba, like putting Oba over like that with somebody that you have propped up like Cody Rhodes, to me makes a ton of sense. It makes so much sense for that to be the case for Oba. Like you said, Roman's going to be doing whatever with, I mean, but either one of them, if he goes over Roman, as Roman's kind of been the guy over the last 5 years in WWE as well, like either one I'm good with. And I think you can tell compelling storylines of established guy versus new up and coming guy who's taking WWE by storm. But that still means we still have a Brock Lesnar problem.
Okay, so I don't have the brackets in front of me. I'm just trying to figure out, could there be a bad finish on Oba Femi where someone holds his legs down and he loses a matchup on a fuck finish? I don't know what the brackets look like, because I'm trying to figure out, like, you mentioned who could pin Oba's shoulders to the mat, 1, 2, 3, outside of I'm thinking, is there someone in the division in which Paul Heyman interferes? Like, I don't know. Judgment Day, I have no idea what those brackets look like for Oba to even lose any of those matches. I can understand, yeah. If it was like, if all the... all of this was fatal four ways, or if there are three ways,
so
a way for him to lose.
So you have the fatal four ways to get into the semifinals. So yeah. On the other side of bracket from Oba, we have Dominic Mysterio, Braun Breaker, we have Damian Priest, and we have Trick Williams. Mm-hmm. So somebody's got to win that fatal four way. Whoever wins that goes on to face Oba Femi. On the other side, which I believe is happening next week, or maybe it's happening tomorrow on Raw. Rollins, Javon Evans, Tala Tonga, and Ricky Saints in one fatal four-way. Then Jey Uso, LA Knight, Finn Balor, and then Keys are the ones that are in that fatal four-way. Royce Keys. Mm-hmm. So that's the other side of the bracket. And then you win your fatal four-way to get to the semifinals. And then those are one-on-one matchups. You win that matchup, you get to the championship, which is a one-on-one matchup. So that's where, again, at some point, someone's pinning Oba's shoulders to the mat. And outside of Brock Lesnar, to me, Brock shouldn't have even done it. But we gotta limit the damage at this point. Like, we can't be. I mean, is it worth? I mean, Braun Breaker just lost to Seth Rollins clean on Monday Night Raw. Like, that just happened. So Braun Breaker pinning Oba Femi, that ain't great. Dom pinning Braun? No. Trick's not ready for it. Maybe Damian Priest not ready. Like, I can't see any of those four pinning Oba.
Yeah, and but then from the Lesnar standpoint, he is a draw for Minneapolis.
100%.
And so there's no other match for Brock except for Oba Femi.
Yep. That's all that's left. That's all that's left. And again, because he's not going to be retired by the guy who retires careers. That's obvious.
Yes. But it's too bad, because I think we spitballed that as hiring Brock Lesnar. Now I guess we're not getting that match, huh?
Mm-mm. No, because again, the only thing that makes sense is Oba Brock part three. So that's where Oba pulling double duty is the only thing that makes sense to me at this point. Is you have to have him win this and then pull double duty.
You know what? And I think that's okay.
100%. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, how? I mean, that's the biggest way you can put someone like Oba over, is by having a main event, not just one night, but both nights.
Yeah, I think that's okay. And the reason why that's okay is because they have short cards anyway. Oba Femi is the hottest thing that's going to the – I wish I could tell you it's Roman or Cody or someone else, but it's not. It's Oba Femi. He gets the biggest reaction when he comes out there. So I can completely see that. King of the Ring – taking on Brock Lesnar and then challenging Cody. Now, again, down the line here on Good Karma Wrestling, we'll talk about Roman versus Cody as one of our topics. Maybe that's something for summer, for a Survivor Series or something down the line, but they did cross paths in Italy and saw each other. So I like to see what that storyline looks like too, by the way. It's Oba winning King of the Ring, and then is it just a cold match? Is there any kind of conversation between Cody and Oba? I don't know.
We're going to have to wait and see and find out how that King of the Ring plays out, because, again, we still have three, you know, I guess, qualifying matches to get into the semifinals, all fatal four ways they're going to be playing out on WWE television. But now we're going to dive into the three count, the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling, and we head to last night for number one, Hood, with the return of Mercedes Moné As she comes back to AEW, she turns out to be the wild card, replacing Willow in the Owen Hart tournament. She beats Alex Windsor in the opening round match, so she moves on. Now, Mercedes did win this tournament last year, and Mercedes a couple of times has challenged for the AEW Women's Championship, has never walked away with it. She's been the TBS champion forever, was a long-running TBS champ, but has never been the Women's World Champion in AEW. So my question for you is, when will that happen? Because it will for Mercedes Moné in AEW.
They got so many different pay-per-views coming up. It could happen anytime. I would say my best bet would be London. But who knows? It's AEW. I do want to give Mercedes her flowers, though, because of all the championships that she won, she actually made professional wrestling from an indie standpoint internationally better, because she traveled to all these places. I know that there's some conjecture that, you know, she took all these championships. Why does she have, hey, it was good for Ultimo Dragon. It's good for Mercedes, right? So when Ultimo Dragon came to WCW, he had like 25 championships, and he had them all over his mask, and he had them on his knees and on his shins. He had titles everywhere. Mercedes went to Poland. She went to Mexico. She went to all these places, and she would wrestle, and those houses were big because she was the champion. And then she lost championship after championship, giving them back. I made the place better by wrestling, being your champion, and then putting someone over that now is your champion. So that's cool.
Yeah, so, not just like, oh, I'm going to surrender the title now, right? Like, no, yeah. She went back and lost every last one. And it's awesome, man. That's pro wrestling. That's the way it's supposed to be. And it's awesome that she did that.
Now those companies, wherever they are, in Winnipeg and Poland and all the places that she went, now that they're better because she was a champion. And now whoever their champion is now, it elevates those indies. I would say London is the spot where that she's going to win the women's championship. I'm glad that she went away, because the old adage, as you well know, Gabe, is how can I miss you if you don't go away? She goes away. She comes back to Dynamite, which is awesome. And now she should be the champion, I would say, on the same night that maybe Will Ospreay will be champion.
Yeah, and because part of that to me is, like, as in favor as I was for Tekla winning the championship, like, the creative for her, I mean, so last night she cuts a promo against her former employer in Stardom, you know, so I'll have to wait and see what that means for her at Forbidden Door. Spits on the Stardom logo. Up on the Jumbotron. So maybe that starts something interesting for her, but it feels like Tekla's kind of been an afterthought since she's won, which is a bummer. Cause again, I was excited for her winning, but the creative just hasn't been there. And it doesn't feel like there's a lot of momentum for Tekla as the women's world champion, which makes me think if Mercedes wins this and then, you know, it makes her a back-to-back Owen Hart Cup winner. Okay, she wins this, goes on, and finally gets over the top. I would assume her coming back, she's got to be in the main event picture. She's been TBS champ. The only thing that's left for her to do in AEW is to win this championship.
So we're clear, and I know it's fuzzy math when it comes to AEW. So Mercedes coming back as a babyface?
I mean, they kept cutting to the crowd. You know, people were doing her little, like, you know, CEO dance in the crowd. So I guess...
Okay.
But she's never been a babyface in AEW. You know, obviously there was the huge pop when she showed up, but she's been, and Mercedes is always, whether it was Sasha Banks, whether it's Mercedes, like, she's always played better as a heel, like, just always has. Even though people love her and want her to get over, I don't know. I would assume she's a babyface, especially if she's going up against Tekla, but that could change at any moment with Mercedes.
That should be a good matchup because they're both technically sound. As far as Tekla as the champion, it's just a crowded field, man. They have a very talented roster. But here's the problem, and this is as tastemakers as you and I are, on one side, you can look at a company that's very good at telling stories and slowing it down and giving you packages and then spotlighting certain wrestlers, right? And then they get in the ring, they have their match, and then they have another match. But again, they slowly tell you the story of why this match is important. The other side, you have another company that just says, this person against this person, go. This person against this person, go. Well, what's the backstory? No backstory, just wrestle. Give me your best 15, 20 minutes. And it's a banger, but it doesn't tell the story. We know Tekla is the female spider, but as far as her match quality is concerned, it's always good. But when you're just taking on match after match after match, then her title reign just seems blah because you don't tell the story of who Tekla really is, mm-hmm. right? And that's the difference.
Well,
that's why you said what you said is because you've seen her in matches and you're like, hats off.
Oh, yeah.
But then you don't really tell the story and slow it down to be able to say why this match is important against Tekla.
Yeah, and that's something they haven't really done in the women's division. They've been better in the men's division. Obviously, the story that they're telling with Will Ospreay, with the Death Riders. They a lengthy promo last night for Briscoe as he wants to go after MJF. MJF saying it's never going to happen. Like, they've done some of the stuff on the men's side. Yeah. We'll get to the Don Callis family getting bigger and bigger with Kevin Knight joining over there as he had his match last night with Speedball Mike Bailey. Like, there was a lot, but again, on the women's side, I was glad to see her get promo time. She got significant promo time, and maybe that's what's missing. Like, her, you know, and again, I know there's a language barrier there, but that hasn't stopped, you know, like Io Sky, there's obviously a language barrier there over in WWE. That hasn't stopped WWE from telling compelling stories, you know, with English not being the first language. And both of the, I think that's what you can use is, okay, yeah, we can still do something really interesting with Tekla. And I think that's what they're trying to do, because the story, I believe, if I recall, when Tekla left, I think she was fired from Stardom, like her contract expired, so they fired her. So that's why she's kind of firing back. And now Stardom's a part of Forbidden Door at the end of the month. So maybe they're trying to call back on that. But again, not everybody is as into this as we are, right? Like, you've got to explain that, I think, in a little more detail, maybe with some promo packages of, hey, here's what happened, here's why she's upset, and here's what Stardom's going to do about it.
Yeah, I think that those things are good. I think sometimes Collision does a good job of that. Some of the best stuff is either on social or on Collision. What about Dynamite? It's only your number one? No? Not on Dynamite? Okay, fine. But Collision will do that, and also you'll see that on their social media. And it's like, hey, man, I know that you want everyone to look at everything at all times with AEW, but, you know, we have bandwidths. We got lives. Like, we love wrestling, but sometimes mm-hmm. stuff gets slipped through the cracks. So, you know, as far as Mercedes, man, I think that she goes to England, to London, England, and she wins the championship. And she's just going to have great matches, just like we saw last time she was champion. I still think that there's money in Athena against Mercedes Moné. We saw it for a glimpse. Was it last year?
Yeah, I feel like that's the final of this thing. I feel like the final at Forbidden Door is going to be Athena versus Mercedes.
So yeah, but I need Athena to win one of these times.
that's the problem. Like, one of them has to go over, and then they actually have to finally actually win, you know, kind of the bigger matches. But like Persephone or Hazuki, you know, not going to beat Mercedes. Sky Blue, as much as we love her, she going over Athena?
No, she's not. No.
It's Athena versus Mercedes.
Sky Blue's a good hand, but she's not going to be there. Athena, by the way, is having like a Bruno Sammartino run with that ROH championship.
Oh, she's the forever champ. Like, they may have to just retire it. Like, nobody else could ever be champ after Athena ROH women's champion.
But like, it's very strange. I mean, good for her. I mean, I told you and Brian, like, I watch ROH, so I know that she's doing a great job. It's just like, not a lot of people know.
Which is a bummer because, I mean, Brian was probably the most excited when she first showed up in AEW, but she's been 90% ROH.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess you're right. I think I could see Moné and Athena just knocking, you know, tearing the house down and Moné winning the championship. I like to see that as a rivalry, not just one-offs like we saw last year in the tournament. So that's what
Yes. Cause I think you could do really fun, compelling stuff with the characters of Athena and Mercedes going forward. But we seem to be on the same page there. At number two this week, we head back to WWE. You had mentioned it earlier, Hood, that backstage at Clash, we got a little bit of a tease between Roman and Cody. Cody also, I can't remember on one of which media outlet he had said it, but it kind of mentioned, oh, yeah, hey. I think it was part of the post game on WWE, where he showed up at the desk saying, hey, it's 1-1. It's 1-1. You know, I kicked his ass. He barely escaped by the skin of his teeth the first time, but we're even right now at one apiece. So are we getting Roman Cody part three? And if yes, where is that matchup going to happen?
Okay. Let's start way ahead. It better not be a WrestleMania in Saudi. It better not be. But then again, the Crown Prince, whatever he wants, right? Title, like, do you get a title unification match? And the thing is that that can't be because Oba's got to win the title first. We might get that match in which maybe one of the guys are not going to be the champion. More than likely, it's not going to be Cody. It'll be Cody going against Roman. And to me, that would be so repetitive. Gabe, we can't keep going back to two wells. It's two wells. It is the well of Roman versus Cody and the bloodline against MFT. Honest to God, do you have anything else that you could write beside those two things? Honestly, we cannot go back to Cody versus Roman again. And because what's the point? They're both great. You're both pretty. Okay, now leave the bar. Like, what do we have to do this again? And we know that whoever wins, what does that really mean? If Cody beats Roman, what does that really mean? Roman's going to want his win back. Mm-hmm. And same thing with the vice versa. So I it's a matchup that I don't need to see again. But it looks like we're going to get it because, you know, Roman said some things on Raw about Cody. And they saw each other in the hallway at the Clash of
Italy. Clash.
I just, it's a matchup I don't need to see. Why do I need that match in my life again?
I mean, it can, and I guess it could happen. I mean, I was under the impression, it seemed like at least, Roman was not going to be going to Saudi this summer. And he was not going to go there for a Night of Champions. Are we just going to see them fight for that big ass belt that they created for Night of Champions? Like, dude, just run back the champion versus champion thing that they've done at Night of Champions in Saudi before. Is that when we see this? They're just going to kind of lazily run that back again. Cause I don't need it there either. Like, you've got the finals. And this is going to be interesting to see how they handle it in Saudi. But if we've got only five matches on that card, well, two of them already taken up with King of the Ring finals, Queen of the Ring finals. So are we going to see Roman versus Cody? Are we going to see, Rhea versus Liv? Like, what is that? What we're, I mean, we're just going to run back that one too, you know, cause again, like we're just going to go champion versus champion as the other ones. Like, I don't know what the rest of that card's going to look like. And we already know what two of the five matches are likely going to be. And I'm guessing that's where we get it. But again, I don't feel like I need, like, we already finished this story. We don't need to go back to it. We don't need to go back for any reason to have these two go head to head. It's only going to make everybody mad that The Rock's not involved. Like, I thought we were already over this.
This company is the cool company because they got all the sponsors, they got all the guests and all the musicians that come and sit at ringside to see WWE. I get that as the industry leader. Totally understand that. But this company is in flux, Gabe. It is. Creatively. It's in flux. Because if you're still rolling out the possibility of Roman versus Cody, I don't know any of my WWE friends or wrestling friends that want this match, that need this match. And as you just laid out, it's very likely that we'll get this Night of Champions. But it's something I asked for, okay? So in the same thing with the bloodline, this is what you come up with. Jacob Fatu back with the bloodline as a fourth member. Have we not been there before?
Yeah, with the MFTs, with the fake bloodline. He already did this with the fake bloodline, and now he's doing it with the real bloodline or just running bloodline. I saw a funny tweet the other day when it came to bloodline, and I wish I'd have sent it to you guys. But like, the bloodline saga has lasted longer than the Attitude Era.
Yes.
Like, what's genuinely recognized as the Attitude Era, one of the most celebrated eras in professional wrestling, the Bloodline saga is now longer than it, which is outrageous to think about. Like, from the first time that Roman, you know, joined forces with Paul Heyman all the way up to right now, where they're just running it back. I mean, is Sammy going to join back up with them? Like, how many times are we just going to run this thing back with the Bloodline?
It was a cool book until you got toward the back end and said, this is repetitive and it sucks. If you read this as a book, you'd say, boy, the first three quarters of this book is pretty good. Then you start going to these back pages in 2026 and you go, wait, didn't I just read this before? Let me go back.
Yeah.
Was this not chapter three? Hang on. It's chapter 16 now. Well, wait a minute. Now, I thought that you can't keep going this way. It is creatively bankrupt in some ways. And by the way, it's 2026. It's time for some new matches and new matchups. Triple H has to look at this thing and says, look at this roster. What can we do to be able to switch some things up? And they haven't. They've just gone back to the old creative well. And Cody and Roman's part of that. It sounds like to me what you just said, just for them to be able to see each other face to face is a matchup that we're going to see at Night of Champions. And it's kind of like it's a PLE for me that's skippable. Because it has to do with the storylines is leading into, say, WrestleMania. Next time to go to Saudi Arabia after this Night of Champions. I don't like what's happening. AEW is the company right now that's doing a better job with stories and fresher matches than you have in WWE.
Yeah, and look, I mean, Cody's kind of dead to me anyway after he appeared on Unsportsmanlike with our guy Evan Cohen and forgot about the Royal Rumble. So, you know, it's that his big three PLEs were Clash, SummerSlam, and WrestleMania. Okay. And our guy, Evco, had to step up and go, oh, no Royal Rumble? I mean, two-time Royal Rumble winner. Just completely forgot about the one of the most fun events each and every year. Cody, he's dead to me. Dead to me.
I would just tell you that QB1's been hitting the head a lot. I think that's the problem. He's been hitting the head a lot. So he forgot the Rumble. But you know what? You can still embrace him. You gotta understand he's a wrestler. Up here, man, he's got a lot of stuff going on.
The Rumble. It's the Rumble hood, though.
I would have said Clash. Said that at all. I know he's trying to push the Clash in Italy. That's probably what was on his mind. But yeah, the Royal Rumble. Yeah, it was a mistake. And I'm glad Evco, the executive producer of GKW, straightened him out. The Rune Arledge of GKW straightened it out.
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is why I would have been okay with Cody dropping the champion. If this is the route we're going to go, like, I would have been cool with Cody dropping the championship to Gunther. Because, yeah. Gunther Roman coming up at Night of Champions. Okay, now you have my interest. Okay, that's fresh. That's new. Let's see what happens when these two cross paths. Or even Jacob Fatu versus Cody. If he, you know, unseats Roman, okay, I'm interested. Cody versus Roman again.
See, here's what happens, Gabe. You really don't necessarily, you have so many mouths to feed, right? The TKO mouth, the WWE mouth, you got so many mouths to feed that you have all these events almost every 3 weeks to a month. You got to have an event, and it's too much, and it always been too much. Even going back to the Attitude Era with WWE and WCW, having pay-per-views every month can bankrupt you from a creative standpoint. Look what's happened. They've painted themselves in the corner creatively so many times. They've had injuries they had to deal with. They had to go around the injuries to certain wrestlers. It's too much. I'm never one to say it's too much wrestling, but but what is a major event when you have a major event every month, right? It's kind of like Triple H saying before the Clash of Italy, this will shake the foundation of the WWE.
That's everybody's favorite tweet after any PLA reports. Triple H says that the foundation of WWE has changed, or the landscape has changed. You know, just different ways to phrase that.
So when you don't book well, and then you lie. Because I was looking for something maybe special at Clash, and we got nothing special at Clash. Now you're Dixie Carter from TNA. Now you're Dixie Carter, because that's what Dixie would say all the time. We have someone coming in that you're just going to love. This is going to change the whole foundation of TNA. Ladies and gentlemen, Christian. What? Ladies and gentlemen, the Nasty Boys. I mean, come on, man. Like, so you underdeliver. You know, we have a company that you and I work for that's about over-delivering, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be able to over-deliver. The WWE is a company that under-delivers.
So, Brian, even though Brian Rowitz is not with us today, he did send us, I found the tweet that I was referencing. So he did send this to us.
Yep.
So the Bloodline storyline, 1,789 days and counting. Things that it outlasted includes the WWE Attitude Era, which is, there's this tweet saying approximately 1,230 days, late 1997 to WrestleMania X7 in April 2001. The Bloodline storyline is longer than World War I, which was 1,568 days. The mainstream career of Nirvana, the American Civil War, the Beatles' global touring era, the entire presidency of Abraham Lincoln, the entire WCW NWO storyline, which is 1,723 days.
Wow.
The building of the Titanic, and it is longer than what it would take you to get a standard college degree, 1,460 days. That's how long. Like, you could have started college at the beginning of the Bloodline saga, graduated college, started your career, Bloodline's still happening.
Isn't that something? That's crazy. Remember when we were freshmen and watching the story? Yeah, now we're throwing our caps in the air. Now we've graduated. And by the way, now I'm married. And still, it's going on. I started a family. How about that? In the blue. It's just crazy, man. That's just crazy. But no really new, fresh pages to it. It's the same people that's in the same spots. I just, I don't know.
Yeah. Again, we'll wait and see what happens. But I guess I'm not hopeful with Jacob falling in line, you know, waving his head in the dreadlocks as he put his one to the air. To signify that everybody else back there, there's the twos and they, the ones.
Wait, go back. Let me just ask you a quick question about this Roman. Okay, so if there's no bloodline, what's the major story in WWE? Just wipe them off the map. No Roman, no Usos, no Jacob, no MFTs. If there's no Tongans or Samoans, okay, in the company.
Uh-huh.
What's the main storyline? What's the thing that keeps your interest in WWE without them?
Oba.
Oba against the world, right?
Yeah, Oba against the world. Trick's been fun, so I would throw him on the short list. God, it seems like we're teasing. I mean, is the Judgment Day, has that been going on longer than? I don't think it's been going on longer. But it's getting close, right? The Judgment Day has lasted a long time. They're teasing, like, they're starting to tease, like, Dissension in there, too. The way, like, Liv came in on Monday Night Raw after Roxy was all bummed out because she lost her Queen of the Ring qualifier match. And I'm done. I'm really getting sick of them continuously teasing, like, the blowing up of that group. And either do it or don't. I don't care. Just stop teasing it.
Wow. You know, we got to keep our eyes on – you're right. We got to keep our eyes on the Judgment Day. This goes back to Edge.
Yes.
Okay. So we got to keep our eyes.
Yes.
On the Edge administration.
Like, none of the original members are still in that group. That's the incredible part.
Yeah.
That none of the original members are still there. And somehow the group's gotten bigger. It's five. It's running five wide right now.
For the record, folks, Gabe Neitzel did not mention Cody as of for interest for him without the bloodline. So there you have it.
We move on to number three. We go back to AEW because yet another member of the Don Callis family was introduced last night. That is right. Kevin Knight, the Jets, the TNT champion, has joined forces. Apparently, if you turn heel, you just become part of the Don Callis family. That's what it feels like, at least right now in AEW. Are we getting to a point where the Don Callis family is now too big? It's hard to keep track of all of its members right now, Hood.
Yeah, I heard Don Callis on Busted Open say that he wants it to be even bigger because he looks at it as like a basketball team or a hockey team. And I just think that that's just bizarre. This, by the way, has to be, without question, the biggest faction of all time. And that surpasses, to me, the NWO Red and Black or the Black and White. I think is it, for one family that's not, you know, cut in half, I think it's the biggest all time. Jimmy Hart had a big faction in Memphis, the first family, but it was never this big. I think Jimmy had like six or seven guys, but it was never as big as this right now. It is too big. Especially if
you 15, people- 15 deep, by the way, right now. And that's after losing to Keshta.
I think that's a rib on everybody that is 15 guys. I think that's what it is. I don't think we've ever had a faction this big in the history of the business.
For those of you playing the home game, so here are the members of the Don Callis family. Kyle Fletcher, yep. Trent Beretta, Lance Archer, Brian Cage, Mark Davis, Josh Alexander, Rocky Romero, Hechicero, Okada, Andrade, El Clone, Jake Doyle, Volador Jr., Kevin Knight, and apparently still counting in this is Wardlow.
Who's on the shelf?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's over out of that list?
Fletcher's over. Andrade's over. Okada's over. And Kevin Knight's over.
Yeah.
And Brian Cage should be over, but he's not.
No. So three guys out of 15, you said.
Out of 15, yeah. So Fletcher, Okada. Is Andrade over? I would say Andrade's over, right? And then Kevin Knight.
What does that say? Four. What does that say, Gabe Neitzel? What does that say? Like, it's a rib that is 15 guys. But if a lot of guys are not over, then it's kind of a waste, right? I mean, you're under Don Callis' family. But the other thing is that Don Callis is amongst some of the laziest managers in the history of the business also. Never at ringside. Hardly ever at ringside. That's why I thought Team Taz sucked too. Like, remember back in the day with Team Taz?
Yeah.
Like, how come these managers are not at ringside to do the job? They're at the commentary desk. They're sitting in a chair. Like, that's not the traditional manager way. Don's there to do commentary on his team's matches. You got four guys out of 15 that's actually over. Kevin Knight as a heel, I think it's a mistake. The reason why is because you should be able to see the wheels turning of him being a heel. It happened too quick for me. And I also think that there was an opportunity while Swerve does his thing for Kevin Knight to take that spot as champion and to be a babyface that's well-liked. I thought it was too quick for that turn. And by the way, I don't buy him as a heel at this time. I don't. You beat up on your old tag team partner Speedball Mike Bailey. He's a wishy-washy babyface that I'm not into. I know a lot of people respect Mike Bailey. It's fine.
I respect him in the ring, but again, like, in order to stand out in AEW, you need to be more than just somebody who's really good in the ring.
I feel like there's a disconnect when he in his promos.
Mm-hmm.
For me, we interviewed him. I thought it was fine. That was a good interview. It's okay. But the French Canadian in him makes a little bit of a different disconnect for me as a fan. But I thought that Kevin Knight's turn was too quick. And then to align himself with the Don Callis family. So not even the guy that's with FTR can align himself with him. Stokely?
Yeah. Someone yeah. Like- so, yeah. But again, it feels like, again, if you're a heel, you're somewhat aligned with the Don Callis family. Because even like FTR was leaning on, in order to like fill out their you know, different teams, was they were going up against, you know, Cope and Christian.
Yeah.
Like, it felt like, oh, if we need a bigger team, we got to go talk to Don. Don's our buddy. We just need to borrow some of the talent he's got.
And also with the 15 guys, they're all kind of protecting MJF. At one point, Andrade was hot and heavy for the World Heavyweight Championship. Is that still happening? Are they going to have a match?
Potentially, maybe, at some point.
I thought that was going to be a thing, as you recall. Remember when MJF won the championship the second time, the walls start closing in on him, and one of those guys was Andrade, winning some matches on TV, getting hot, and now that's not happening anymore. So it's 15 guys, none of them vying for the world title. It's a rib.
Yeah, who knows?
And then on top
it's
of
so
that,
big. I can't keep track of it all.
And on top of that, who's the number one manager in the business today? Today.
In the business, it's still Heyman.
Okay, who's number two?
Number two, best manager. I mean, I can't say Callis because, like, is it Callis?
I mean, there's not many anymore, but I feel like, you know, Stokely's working with FTR.
Yeah.
Who else am I missing? Oh, well, I mean, John Moxley's a pseudo Matt. He's like a player coach for his
career. For the Death Riders, yeah. Especially the story they're telling with him and Ospreay.
Yeah. So, I mean, Callis might have the numbers, and it is – I have to confirm this, but I think it's the biggest faction of all time. But if no one's over, then what's the point? It just gives – and by the way, we won't know now, but I'm sure some of those guys think that Callis takes their heat. When he comes out
there, sure.
Says F you Callis, everyone says it. Like, all the fans say it. But I feel like every time he steps out there, his wrestlers come out there, and Callis gets all the heat and not the wrestlers. It's very strange.
Yeah. And again, we'll see where it goes because it doesn't feel like it's going anywhere. He's just adding and adding and adding, and it doesn't seem like it's actually going to end in anything.
You know, Rick Rude said that about Bobby Heenan too. He says, "Hey, ask Rick. It's like, would you like, you know, do you like working with Bobby? Like, yeah, he stole my heat, not necessarily. Like, really, the greatest of all time?
You're right.
It's like Bobby stole my heat. Okay, great."
But again, like, if we're talking about Heyman has always been really good about, yes, he's getting a lot of the heat, but he's just really good about, like, making sure that whoever's in his faction, whatever it's been, that they still stand out. Like, the way he would put over Brock when he was managing Brock, the way he even puts over the Bloodline, the way, you know, even now with the Vision, like, Logan Paul and Austin Theory are still getting heat. It helps that Paul's there. Like, Paul's the heat magnet, but he's also spreading it out evenly amongst everybody else in the crew.
Yeah. So, yeah. So the answer is yes. Way too big.
We move on to news and notes. Not a lot here this week, but the big news. So Lucha Underground, apparently not interested in selling those rights, you know, in terms of selling the library. Apparently they're seeing, I'm just putting pieces together, might be seeing some of the success of, like, WWE, their YouTube page. They've been putting a bunch of old matches and things like that on the YouTube page. Looks like Lucha Underground might be looking into launching their own YouTube page to release all the old episodes.
I wonder who owns the rights.
MGM.
Oh, really? Oh, well, I don't blame them. Hell, they could put it on the MGM channel and just run all those old episodes.
Yeah, so earlier this week, yesterday, in fact, Sean Ross Sapp over at Fightful said, sources have spoken to claim, Amazon/MGM have not been interested in selling the Lucha Underground library. The belief is they're gearing up to launch a YouTube channel.
Okay. All good. I enjoyed that very much. It was very different than everything else we saw in wrestling at the time. So, good for them.
All right, this is where we normally talk about matches of the week. If you want to throw more than one in there, I feel like we're going to take this time and really just talk about one match because it stood out and it might be the match of the year. And it was really smart, I thought. And I could have gone to the YouTube page, but when I was watching back Monday Night Raw, for WWE to take the mask versus mask, El Grande Americano versus El Grande Americano match and just throw it on the back of Monday Night Raw, I thought that was genius. I thought that was a great way to leverage their relationship, a great way to go, hey, we are very much involved in AAA. We think this match is awesome. We want to expose it to our Monday Night Raw audience. We're going to make it as easy as possible. We're not even just going to tell you how awesome this was. We're just going to throw it on the back of the episode of Raw and you can enjoy it. And that's how I enjoyed it, Hood. I mean, seriously, it was match of the year candidate. The way that everybody in that arena was seemingly just hanging on the edge of their seats for mask versus mask was spectacular.
So there's two matches that I wish that we as a crew, as a family, went to. Obviously, it's Bad Bunny in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
I think about that match once a week.
Yeah.
And it's what we saw with mask versus mask. You know, with this, Undertaker could be Booker of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Out of nowhere, right?
100%. And he was also, because he was also smart enough, like knowing and being able to read the audience, that this thing was so big. Like, Dominic Mysterio wasn't anywhere near this card, even though he's the AAA champ, right? And Undertaker's an old school guy. He wants that championship to mean something, but also knew, like, let's not put him on this card and have this match outshine our champion. Let's just have this match. We can celebrate it is for what it is. And I got to imagine for Kaiser, AKA now the one that's been, you know, from day one, the second that he stepped foot in that territory at AAA, like, they have embraced Kaiser as El Grande Americano. And I got to imagine we're getting a Grande versus Mysterio championship match at some point down the line now.
I just want to take a moment just to kind of dissect a little of this. So again, on the surface, it's two guys that are not Latino.
No.
And everyone is in on it. That's the other thing. It's like, oh, we know that that's Kaiser versus Gable, but the fans in Mexico embraced the story. That's why the story will always matter. You can have, give me your 5- and 6-star matches, all good. But there's nothing like a story in which the fans are in on it and they still suspend their disbelief and they're like, let's just see these two go at it. And someone's mask is going to come off, which is the tradition in Mexico. And just the way it started, where you get the pageantry, the long entrance for both Americanos, right? You've got the mariachi band, everything else. And then just the way it starts, boom, just like that, the guitar shot. And just these guys going back and forth, both guys bleeding. There's something special in wrestling, Gabe, about two masked guys bleeding because they're wearing masks. You don't think that blood would ever show until you rip the mask open so you could see the gaping wound in
yep.
the forehead. That was great to see, the back and forth, the physicality between these two. If you take the masks off these two, it's just a 10-minute match on Raw. You put masks on them in Mexico with stakes, it becomes a 35-minute classic. And that's the difference between a story and a match. The way that you bring in the young lady and JBL right on top of the commentary say, oh, what about this girl? Last time we saw her, she was in a fight in the elevator in Florida. As you know, everyone knows that story, right? She's there at ringside. She's part of it. A blind comedian. I wasn't even smart to that. I'm like, why are you beating up on the blind guy? What's Gable doing with the blind guy? The blind comedian. He's part of it as well. The whole thing. And of course, the finish, how that occurred as well. The 1, 2, 3. And then the end of it. You never see this in wrestling, but I guess you see it in Mexico. I'm going to take my mask off and I will tell you who I am. I'll tell you this is my family in the ring with me. And I'll tell you why I had the mask on. You don't get that, the long explanation. I'm Chad Gable from Minneapolis, and I'm an Olympic gold medalist. And here's why I did what I did. I mean, the shame of all that, right?
The crowd was into every second of it, right? Like, as much as they have thrown their support behind Kaiser's version of El Grande Americano, right? And then Gable's been the heel the entire time since he's come back. Like, they were cheering him during his little speech, right? Like, they were behind it. It was unlike anything I've ever experienced watching wrestling. And again, like, really smart. When I first turned on Raw, when I first fired up Raw on Netflix, I went, when did Raw become 3 hours? What the hell is going on? They're back to 3-hour Raws, not realizing that they had at that point. And then, again, they explain it right away that, hey, here's what's going to happen at the end of Raw. We're going to have a great Raw. Then right after, stay tuned, encore presentation to, again, just introduce an entire different – because, again, if you're watching Raw, you're probably aware that AAA, right, and WWE have this relationship now. And, you know, Taker's booking in, all those things. But I don't know how many of those people that watch Raw on a regular basis have gone to the YouTube page, watched it live. And now they just went, this is an easiest way for us to get a lot of people to watch this match. And it was that perfect combination, Hood. You talked about the story. And the story is great. But I also love, like, when the story results in a classic match. Like, it was everything that pro wrestling I want pro wrestling to be. It was everything. It was all the magic combined. Hot crowd, great wrestlers, great story. And it ended up being, we've got 7 months left in the year. I don't know who's going to top that for match of the year.
I just think, Gabe, how it was not taken seriously on Raw, right?
Right.
And then you take it to Mexico and it's a novella. It is an amazing cinema, as the kids say, right? It's amazing how it's treated, where it's like, oh, this goofy thing with Chad Gable and look at Bruto and all these guys. And then over here, I mean, if I'm Kaiser, I'm never leaving Mexico and I'm never taking the mask off. I go north of the border and I'm just a clown. I go south of the border and he's a hero. He stretched his hand out through the ropes. Did you see this?
Mm-hmm.
For the power of the fans. And the fans were behind him like it's the 1980s. He did a Ricky Morton. They're like, please help me. And the crowd was like, yeah, we're with you, man. I mean, you're doing this in 2026. I cannot say this any firmer than this. We saw a 1980s style match with the stipulation in 2026 where it mattered. In Mexico, where the fans know who's behind the mask, know that's not one of your countrymen, and still we're like, yeah, man, you got to beat Gable. You got to do this.
Think about how crazy that is. Yeah, most over luchador in AAA is a German dude. That's unbelievable. That's awesome.
If this is in Indianapolis, it's 6 minutes of bullshit on Raw.
Correct. Yeah, and that's it. But awesome, awesome match. And again, like I said, I think everyone's going to have a tough time topping that. If you haven't, check it out on Netflix. Check it out on YouTube. I just cannot encourage everyone to watch that match any more than we've talked about it. It's so good. So good. If you missed any of today's show, if you missed any of our previous shows, previous interviews, make sure you take a look at the YouTube page, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling. Comment, subscribe. Go along for the ride with us here on GKW. Right here. Again, next week, we got a lot. Again, we got a couple of tournaments going on. King of the Ring, Queen of the Ring, Owen Hart tournaments, pay-per-views, PLEs. It's going to be a hot summer of wrestling. And you know we're going to be talking about it all summer long right here on GKW. Buckies.